Well, welcome to another broadcast of the Word for Life radio program. Dr. Les Olala co-hosts the show with me from Northern Baptist Bible College, and I have the opportunity of ministering with him as well as serving as the pastor of Brookside Baptist Church. And we're excited to be here with you and hope that the broadcast today will be a blessing. We are wrapping up our final program on how to protect our children in a decaying culture. And Doc, you've given us a lot to chew on. You started off by talking about the control that we have as a parent when our children are young, especially those early ages of 1 to 5. Is that kind of where we were talking? And really just laying out commands, teaching them to listen and to obey, and then examining and helping shape their character. And what was the next thing after that?
Then it goes in from 6 to 12, where they're starting to learn character in application, where they learn applying responsibilities, discipline, saying no to self, accepting full responsibilities in all of the tasks. We don't let them become irresponsible people. We make them to do the kind of things. They're still in obedience. Then we let the rope go a little bit, and we want to start getting them from out-and-out obedience to start growing into honor.
Doing it out of love and out of respect.
Yes. Ephesians 6 says, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor thy father and thy mother, which is the first commandment with promise. Because if we don't ever turn to honor, action forced is obedience. Attitude that is willing is honoring. And so you want to go from forced obedience to a willing honoring of the parent. That comes out of the will. Otherwise, if all we do is continue to force obedience, when they get to that outer stage, that outer ring, then they just they break away and, and really don't have the conviction.
So really, from the time they're 13 on, as we get ready to let them go at the end, as you're going to talk to us about here in a moment, we're really working on their attitude more than we're – I mean, we are working on their action, but where we're really focusing in on is their attitude.
Right, because it comes from outside action that's forced to an inner attitude that is an honor, where they are really, they enjoy, they genuinely enjoy being around mom and dad because they appreciate, they're honoring. Literally, that means considering them precious and keeping that. We don't want to have anything grow in that's going to keep them from considering us to be precious in their lives.
And I want to keep this in the broader discussion that we've been having, because ultimately what we're trying to do is go back to those thoughts that you gave us several broadcasts ago, where we're to be in the world but not of the world. And our mission is to the world in order to reach the world for the Lord. And we can't be isolated and we can't be assimilated into the world. We've got to insulate so that we can be effective channels for the grace of God. And that means we have to help our children become that.
And at the same time, they're under attack. The bombardments of television, the bombardments of radio. We say, well, we're going to protect our kids from the internet. But are we protecting them from talk radio at 5 in the afternoon?
Right.
I mean, there is some rotten stuff out there on talk radio in the afternoons in some of these cities. And it'd be very easy to get trapped into that. Then the video games, the things that are time wasters.
Right.
See, we're now learning to partner with them in helping them make wild decisions in these matters, because they will run with kids who have no restraints. And literally, these kids envy the fact that your child has a parent who makes them come home at a certain time. These kids who are out there freewheeling don't enjoy it.
Even though your child might not understand that at that time.
No. The child doesn't understand it. Child envies that person. I remember my dad, he didn't put up with any foolishness. And I was preserved from some pretty negative things by my dad drawing some lines for me. And my dad was not coming from a spiritual perspective on it. He was coming from a character's perspective. I came into town one time with some kids from across the street. Just rode back with them. Dad saw me coming into town with them, and when I got to the house, he said, if you're going to run with that crew, then you probably better plan to start living somewhere else, because you're not going to live here and do that. I didn't argue, because I was just getting a ride home, but he had enough sense to warn me that he could see irresponsibility. My dad tolerated no irresponsibility. And he pounded into our heads, and he did some New City counseling me long before Adam's books were written. I think that...
And there's a lot to that.
It was a great protection, and I never resented the stringency. I had a neighbor who got to quit school, which would have been my dream if I could have done it. He got to quit school, and he joined the Navy. I thought, that lucky dog. But when I was in the woods working, he was down at the beach. His mother, they had a cottage, and they were out riding this Chris-Craft boat. I remember I got to go one time with them. I thought that was the biggest deal ever. And I thought, you know, they're not being made to go out. We had to start stacking winter's wood, and we had to start getting all these things. Mm-hmm. And we were at fall hauling potatoes. And, I mean, it was just one thing right after another. And he got to join the Navy, and brilliant. I mean, the kid must have had an IQ. I don't think mine moved the meters. I think his would have been way up there.
This is up when you were growing up.
Yes. And he had really a genius mind. And I was hitchhiking to church one Wednesday night. The car stopped, and there was George. I said, I thought you were in the Navy. He said, well, I was. Well, he ended up, he got in an argument with an officer and knifed an officer. Ooh. And any military manual, I think that would be a no-no.
You know what I'm saying? It's like the understatement.
And
the
they told him he didn't really need to be there anymore. Fortunately, he didn't end up in a brig. But it was that, hey, I'm not going to be told what to do, because he never was made to do what he didn't feel like doing. And then suddenly I began thinking, well, maybe it wasn't so. Maybe that wasn't the thing to envy.
You know, I can relate a little bit because, you know, as we grow up, you think about your mom and dad. Nobody ever tells them anything. They get to do whatever they want. My son said that to me the other night. And I thought, oh, if you just knew how many people tell me what to do all the time. And I think our listeners could relate to that, that we have men driving to work today. And I'm sure their 8-year-old sons think, boy, when I get to be like dad, I'm going to get to drive anywhere I want to go. And dad's listening saying, oh, son, I wish you could hear this right now, because I'm going to work and I'm going to answer to people all day long, and learning to do that at a young age. Now, you have two things here, choice and conviction, in your diagram for us today.
Yeah, in late adolescence, 16 through 18, I put that at the stage. I mean, again, those ages may vary. But there are three choices that we need to start working with them on at that time. One is their finances. We feel
how to handle their money.
Yeah, we feel kids insist on starting to make their own money at this point, but the problem is they also begin to insist on spending it the way they want to.
Mm-hmm.
When I was that age at home, Dad says, you're able to work, you put food on the table. And all of us boys paid room and board when we lived at home and worked. So if we made money, we took a chunk of that money and gave it to Dad or to Mom, and it put food on the table. Well, we did not have the free wheel of our finances at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we need to guard those young people. They're making money. Okay, what are we going to do with that? Have you learned the tithe principle? Have you learned who owns everything you have?
Wow.
If they can't get that principle down, then they're not learning that the first fruits, God owns all of it, but mm-hmm. he has given me the responsibility mm-hmm. to give that first fruit to him.
Right.
And then I don't own any of it. Mm. I manage it. But he owns it all.
You're going to give an account for it one day.
And to teach that, tithing was started in the Old Testament to teach the fear of the Lord. So every time we write a tithe check, we are reminding ourselves that we acknowledge God's ownership mm-hmm. over our life.
And that's not legalistic.
No,
I mean, that's simply recognizing that God does own it. And in fact, if we want to talk about New Testament grace giving, we ought to be giving more than 10%.
That's a great place to start, horrible place to stop.
Mm-hmm.
So that finances, we need to be very wise. I used to have our camp banquets in October, and I tell the parents, don't let your young people get a job that's going to require them to miss summer camp, even though they think the money, they have to have that much money. Mm-hmm. Well, basically, they want that much more money to buy the junk car they have their eye on down the road, and they end up missing a tremendous phase of their lives. The next thing, they make choice regarding friends. Up until this point, for the most part, we've been picking friends. Now they're getting a little bit older, and they're starting to develop relationships, not dating or courting relationships necessarily, just friendships. But those friendships are now more independent. They're not all under our control. We are helping them make choices. I say you can't run with a skunk and smell like a rose. I think, I'm not sure. I think that's a proverb principle
yeah.
there, but it's not exactly stated in that way.
It's in the Hebrew part.
He who walketh with wise men shall be wise, but a companion of fools will be destroyed.
Right.
And a good study to do at this point would be contrasting wise choosers, foolish choosers. I did it with our youth group. I made a listing of Bible characters, choice they made, consequence of the choice that they made. And then they also make choices regarding their future. What am I going to do with my life? You guide them to college. You help them, guide them. But Matthew 6:33 has to be a controlling thought in their mind. Seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. and all these things shall be added. So the first claim principle of who owns me, I run my decisions by his throne. So
you and I have dealt with parents before, and I think you're on target here, Doc, when particularly with their future. I think particularly when choosing a college, you know, if you start young saying to your children, this is where we want you to consider going, and you have a limited number of choices, but you're gearing them toward a Christian college education or how you feel the Lord is leading that child in you as a parent, you have a much easier time than when you try to get them to start talking about it for the first time when they're 18.
That's true. And you're laying out the principles for what you want them to build as patterns in their life.
Right.
Even if they don't end at a Christian college, they get the first year or two of Bible basics apart from the home.
And that's so crucial. What about the conviction?
Well, the outer ring, obviously, our goal from adulthood on is personal, permanent conviction. That is, by now they're making choices that are personal and permanent, reflecting the value that the parents have.
This isn't just what they do anymore, it's who they are now.
It's who they are, because now they're away from home.
Mm-hmm.
They're away at college. They may be at home going to college for a while, but they are now 18 and legally considered adults. And now you have to have a real friendship relationship with your child, because that child now is now seeking counsel from you, but he's no longer under the direct control of your home and of your family. As long as he is living at home, there is still a control. But the honor of seeking counsel is an ongoing process that goes on.
So we're well into the honor state now.
Right.
I mean, we've moved all the way from the direct obedience, although we want them to obey.
Right.
But now we're well into the attitude development of honoring a parent.
And that
now.
Attitude goes on right until you get put in a nursing home or move into their home as you get older.
And that's when we reap what we've sown,
right,
as parents. If we haven't developed this in our children, when it comes time for us to be dependent on that chart that you drew, when we come down that other side and we go back to dependence, how we trained our children is going to be impacting.
It'll make all the difference in the world.
Well, Doc, these four sessions have been very, very thought-provoking, very helpful. How to become salt and light, how to help our children learn how to be in the world but not of the world, how to help them and protect them in a decaying environment through the process of control and then becoming a counselor to them and then guiding them in their choices as they make the convictions that they're developing permanent and personal. Thank you for the time. And those of you that are listening, if you would like more information on this topic, please write us. I know we have tried to squeeze much into these four broadcasts, and we'd love to hear from you. We do depend on your prayers and your financial support to keep the program on the air. And if you will send us a donation of $10 or more, we have a book we'd like to send you as a token of our appreciation, The Story of Dr. Les Olala, entitled A Man Among Them. I know that many of you will be praying for us, and we look forward to meeting you again on a future broadcast.